halted at the top of a short flight of stairs. Nona mounted those stairs, and the doors creaked slowly open, revealing cool, wide blackness within. A floor of checkerboard black and white tiles, peeling white walls, old brown stains that someone had tried to clean but not very successfully, and a terrible foul smell. She wanted to let her nose wrinkle, but Harrowhark Nona Jessamus did not seem the type to wrinkle her nose. Camilla said, "Fall back," and Nona fell behind her, sight softening into near blindness as she followed Camilla down into that cool, fetid darkness. They did not walk far. The first door on the left was open, and a strong white square of electric light fell on the tiles. The door was bracketed at either side with old broken piles of rubbish and chair and desk and wood. Camilla hesitated on the threshold, and Nona walked into the light first. They had walked into a broad hall, floored with the same black and white checkerboard tiles. The walls and ceiling were carved with grand white friezes, and both sides of the room had more rubbish and detritus pushed up against them, as though a great wave had swept through the centre of the room and deposited the contents of a tip on either side. Paler squares lined each side of the windowless room where posters or paintings had probably been hung, but were nowhere to be seen now. The room smelled strongly of the type of thing they used to clean the school toilets with. At the end of the room was a raised dais, the same raised dais that had been in the broadcast, and there on a plain and simple chair sat the prince from the broadcast, and behind the prince on the left, Pyrrha. On a chair to the right sat Crown. Crown looked so beautiful that for a moment Nona focused on her to the exclusion of everything else. She had her big, beautiful golden hair down around her shoulders in a profusion of smoothed, rippling curls, and she was wearing a lovely pale yellow slip that left her golden shoulders and throat bare. The dress was slit all the way up to the thigh, and she wore soft black leather trousers beneath it, and sandals on her big shapely feet, and the usual rapier girdled her waist. She was so stunning that Nona was devoutly grateful she was in clean clothes and not her fish market tea. Then her attention wandered past Crown, where Nona thought they had lined up lots and lots of statues. But they weren't statues at all. They were dozens and dozens and dozens of people in uniform, standing in two ranks pressed up very close to the wall. They were not breathing. Their eyes were wide open. They were dead. When the prince stood from his chair, their shoulders, every single shoulder, twitched minutely. In person, the prince was much shorter than she thought he would be, slimmer and slighter, especially next to Pyrrha, who stood like a stone column. She was standing so unlike Pyrrha that for a moment Nona was fooled. She was standing so ready, so waiting, so upright, so uncomfortable in her own skin, that it was like seeing a mirage. But moving broke the spell, at least for Nona. Pyrrha crossed and uncrossed her arms in a way so comfortably and familiarly Pyrrha that Nona couldn't mistake her. Nona was impressed with the prince's looks. She had never seen anybody from the television in real life before. Thanks to the eye stuff, Nona could stare all she liked and not feel rude. At the prince, with his waxen skin and his lovely jacket and his glossy hair and his bluish-coloured eyes, standing poised a bit like a snake would stand if it had legs. The prince said, "You're nearly a minute late, Harry." 23. Nona crossed the black and white floor beneath the electric lights. There was a big red square carpet laid out in front of the dais, so she stopped at its threshold, and she got a less short-sighted look at Prince Cianthe Nibirius. The prince suddenly came down off the dais and walked toward her briskly, and Nona inadvertently took a step back. This stopped the prince. "Look at me," she said. Nona said and did nothing. She swallowed, but felt it was all right to swallow. Harrowhark probably swallowed every so often. The prince said, "What you've done is ridiculous. It can't work. That can't be your handiwork. Not that I'm not impressed. Sure, you look dreadful, but I've had to turn up in some old thing from last season." Crown made a small noise in the back of her throat. The prince turned to her and said, a little accusingly, "You didn't tell me this little detail. Has she been blinded this whole time?" "I told you she was here," said Corona. Her eyes were red-rimmed, and her eyelashes looked a bit too sooty. "I left out the details, so what?" "There is so much you are not telling me, and it makes me so cross," said the prince. "You see, my emotions are being expressed through two nervous systems, so I really don't know what to do with them. I've been in Babs's body for nearly 3 whole days. I hate it. Come on, Harry, don't you have anything to say for yourself?" "No," said Nona. "I don't know why I asked. I knew the answer." "Ah," she said, as Camilla caught up and stood at Nona's elbow. "The dullest prodigal son returns. Those aren't your glasses, Hector, and I am amazed you are permitted to wear them."
"Noted," said Camilla.
"Well, never mind. It's just curious, is all. How's it hanging, Hect? How's tricks? Getting used to life without your necromancer? Going to parties, self-actualizing, reshaping your identity? I don't suppose you had much scope for it before."
Crown said a little warningly,
"Ianthe, don't push it."
But Camilla said,
"I don't care." "I love it when people don't care," said Prince Ianthe warmly. "Don't care was made to care. Don't care was hung. Really, why should you care? Who cares what I think? I'm only a lictor, a sacred fist and gesture, holding the power of life and death, having ascended to the state your pompous, moralizing blowhard of a necromancer disdained. Whereas you're the big girl who made the 6th house secede. Tell me, do they love you for that in Blood of Eden? You don't need to answer. I know how the field lies. Corona's the beautiful and talented token, and you're the grim weirdo who never realised the price of revolution. And I suppose Harrow's nursemaid. Well, it must have been nice for you. She is Sextus's tedious distaff counterpart." "Oh, come on, Harry, really? No comeback?"
"No," said Nona.
"Well, this isn't turning out how I wanted it to. I thought you and I would share a couple of saucy quips. I thought you'd come in here demanding the body of your cavalier."
This was dropped into the conversation like a bomb. Nona let her gaze fall straight forward, blindly, not reacting at all and not knowing how to. The room was silent. In the end, Ianthe said,
"Has that fire cooled? Have you changed your mind on that one? Is Camilla the better model?"
"I consider Camilla Hecht an obvious upgrade. I imagine she hardly makes one ass joke a day."
She let this trail off.
Nona kept saying nothing.
The silence extended until Ianthe filled it again, but this time her voice had changed to flat impatience.
"Well, Hecht, thank you for coming. I suppose you know why you're here."
Camilla said,
"I don't play guessing games."
"Surely you can make an exception,"
Crown said quickly.
"Camilla, don't bother. Everything's going to be fine."
And Ianthe said pettishly,
"Honey, stop telling people things are going to be fine. Things are, I promise you, not going to be fine. Things are, frankly, going to be antonyms of fine."
"You want the 6th house back," said Camilla.
"Not I," said Ianthe.
I've read Sixth House juvenile moral novels about very smart children who save the day with logic, and I think you can all go drown. No, God wants the Sixth House back. Badly. It was unfortunate timing, you know. First we hear that the Sixth House facility is missing. Teacher assumes it melted as a result of little domestic drama, which sets him off wallowing all over again. Then we find out it really is missing, not burned. Who knew the whole station was portable and built to propel itself wherever it wanted? Not a thing to feed the troops on, I must say. How do you get it through a steely? With the weight of that thing, you'd never survive river displacement. 532 obelisks, said Camilla. Really? I'd guessed in the 600 range.
Deleterious effects past 550.
What did you compensate with, purely out of curiosity?
Prefer not to say, said Camilla.
Boo to that, said Ianthena Barius. Oh, well, I'll have to ask one of the members of your oversight body. Whichever one I pick for asking questions, that is. We really don't need all of them.
Nona's eyes were beginning to itch. It was very hard not to rub them. She focused instead on Crown, who was saying in tones that sounded very reasonable and deliberate,
Ianthe, you can't get away with killing off the entire governance and administration of the Sixth House.
Watch me.
No, I've told you before, if you're already dealing with moral failure, you're much better off leaving them in place. Put them under secret house arrest if you have to. Come up with some incentive. Get them to see reason. If you kill them, everyone will know.
Nobody will know, said Ianthe. Nobody knew that you and Deuterus and Hecht didn't die at Canaan House. But everyone knows about the day Dominicus flared. The houses will celebrate any scrap of the Sixth they get back. Very tragic that all 16 members of the Sixth House leadership died, but that's how it is.
Don't be a dolt. The Sixth are so clannish, so set on systems, you'll never truly have them again.
It's called the Boot, my darling, the prince said patiently. Did they teach you nothing in that terrorist cell of yours? It's called applying the fucking boot, and I'm going to teach God all about it. He's been very hands-off for the past myriad, lazy, frankly, and now he's reaping what he's sowed. It's called fear, and I have seen fear and understand it now, and I am going to become wonderfully versed in its transmission. I am the saint of awe. Hecht, you're smiling.
Nona, astonished, turned to Camilla without thinking. She tilted her head back immediately, afraid of being caught out. But by then she had seen Camilla's face. Camilla was smiling, an easy, loose little smile, as though she were listening to a story. She said,
Yes. Share the joke with the rest of the class, Ianthe demanded.
Does God know why the Sixth House left? I'm assuming some grisly moral reason that you're about to impart, said Ianthe, and I want to warn you against sounding like a tract.
The Sixth House, said Camilla, doesn't move for moral philosophy.
Ianthe Naberius spread her hands wide in impatient supplication.
Then for what? So much panic and mess and drama, for what?
Cassiopeia the First left us instructions years ago, said Camilla. We left for a lictor.
For the first time, Prince Ianthe Naberius's mouth dropped open, giving Nona a dim view of exquisitely white and even teeth. She flounced up the dais, threw herself back into her chair. The dead bodies jerked their left hips convulsively, all in unison, like the kind of dance move Born in the Morning thought he was good at, but wasn't, and then she flung over her shoulder to Pyrrha.
You all said she was dead!
She is,
said Pyrrha.
We watched her die.
Then how?
But Camilla and Pyrrha didn't answer. The prince passed one hand over her dead blue and brown spattered eyes and said,
Oh my God, this is the last thing we need. If he hears that yet another one of his duplicitous sluts betrayed him, he's never going to come back from it. He's so fragile right now. Not even if we scourge Antioch and fly the first flag from the tallest tower.
Pyrrha said, Cassie played long games.
This is shitty, the prince pronounced, sounding curiously young and woebegone and frustrated.
Crown threw herself out of her chair and went down on her knees in front of the prince, wrapped her arms around the prince's legs and put her cheek on the dead right thigh. The prince reached out and tangled one hand in her bright springy curls and sighed a cold, dead, defeated sigh. When Crown spoke, her voice was low and tender, the lowest and tenderest voice Nona had ever heard.
Baby, it sounds awful.
Corona, it's death.
So stick it. Stick all this and come home with me. Throw this all in and come to me.
Nona would have immediately thrown everything down and gone to live with Crown, but the prince was not so moved. She laughed a little and pulled at a handful of curls, dropped them to watch them bounce and said,
Don't be ridiculous.
But Crown did not relent.
Come to me. I need you. We've been apart for such a long time, Ianthe. They took you away from me. They took me away from you. Let's let them hang and go off on our own. Drop, Babs. I'll take that shuttle and meet you wherever you want to meet me, and we'll go. We'll start over.
At the bottom of her voice, Prince Ianthe Nibirius said,
There is no starting over, Corona.
There is. I know there is,
Crown said eagerly.
But we're closer to the goal than ever before.
Of course we are, you perfect genius,
said Crown lovingly. And she took the dead gloved fingers and she kissed them. Every single dead soldier's fingers twitched. Prince Ianthe Nibirius raised hers, an involuntary movement almost, and that waxen, handsome face was an expressionless mask with only the cool grey eyeballs moving in their sockets. Then Crown said quietly,
We can do good work, Ianthe. I know people who need us.
For some reason, that was what broke the spell. The hand fell, and Crown's face with it. Prince Ianthe Nibirius smiled, ruffled those deep, burnished curls, and laughed in the coldest way that Nona had ever heard.
People! Oh, darling, you're always everyone else's girl. Don't worry. I fully intend for us to be us together now. But I have the framework for it, and you, my poor dummy, do not. Don't worry about anything. Seriously, you need to relax and to moisturize and to cut your hair,
the prince added, critically, moving to stand.
I'm hagged as hell, believe me. You'll know that when you see me. But you need some serious triage before I can do anything with you. I doubt you even have a skincare routine right now.
She gently shook Crown off her legs. Crown sprawled back against the plain chair and closed her eyes as though something had hurt her. Prince Ianthe Nibirius looked around the room and remarked,
Where's the live one's duty? I see a sad dearth of breathers.
Pyrrha said,
Outside Deuteros's room, as discussed, they're ready.
What? Every single one?
No, five. Others on standby.
When the prince turned to Pyrrha, Pyrrha added,
Didn't like moving the bodies.
What? They need to harden up. We do much worse on the front.
They were never on the front.
Yes, that is becoming tragically obvious. We should have doubled troops here 8 months ago. Well,
Hindsight is its own aptitude. Corona, now you're laughing at me. This is not going down as a good day in my diary. Corona was laughing. She said in a sickly-sounding voice, Listen to you, talking military. It's a bit disgusting, I know, but habit forms quickly. Habits do form quickly with me. Speaking of... Nona was not prepared for Prince Cianthe Naberius to step off the dais, stride lightly over the carpet and stand in front of her again. She was too busy trying to will her eyes to stop streaming. She tried to step back again. She was too slow. The prince caught her by the front of her shirt with one hard, gloved hand. Camilla turned her body toward them both, with her hands placed flat near her scabbards. But the prince didn't seem to care.
Harrow's never this quiet, said the prince softly, nor this passive. What are you doing, Harry? What's your plan? Or, more worryingly, what is wrong with you?
What happened after Mercy Morn stabbed you, Harrow? And where did you go?
You never came back, and God said he thought you might be lost to us. How are you surviving, Harrow Hark the First? How can you stand beneath the light of Number 7, unless I am addressing...
The fist tightened. No, would not do. Yes, was worse. Cam had told her to pretend to be the captain. Nona decided to pretend to be the captain and opened her mouth and screamed like the captain had screamed. She had never been good at coming up with conversations. Nona simply made her mouth go as the captain's had gone. She could remember the movement, it was easy, and she screamed, Help! 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 For want of anything better to say. The scream moved through her chest and up her throat and out of her nose. When she let it out, it did not at all sound like when she had heard the captain do it. The scream somehow seemed to take all the lining of her throat with it. It was like the scream was made of her insides. Her insides dissolved and resolved themselves by coming out her lips as a vocal bomb. The electric light sizzled in its housing. The room went dark. Prince Cianthe Naberius dropped her and staggered back, and Nona completed her captain impression by pitching forward onto the carpet, face down, practically senseless, aware of nothing but the scream, a noise that seemed to keep coming out of her nose and ears and mouth. She went away from herself briefly. Nona came back, dimly aware of a yell, a huge scuffle, then movement. When she lifted her head off the carpet, she was frightened that she had vomited or bled, as her mouth and nose were streaming. But she hadn't coughed up anything except water. The new situation was much worse than before she screamed. She could see Prince Cianthe Naberius's shiny knee-length boots, one of them at least. She was down on one knee, but had drawn a rapier from that scabbard at her side and the tip was pinked with blood. On the dais, Pyrrha's red, rangy body was down. Pyrrha! On her hands and knees, trying feebly to rise. She had drawn a gun from somewhere. Pyrrha was good at drawing a gun from somewhere. But it had been knocked out of her hand and lay glittering in front of the plain chair. Crown was standing, flanked by two dead people, but not being held by them. Camilla, on the other hand, had her arms pinned to her sides by fully four of the dead guards. She had drawn her knives, but her hands were forced outward in front of her, unable to move. The light glittered again, and Nona could see long, cold shadows on the carpet behind her, could feel the press of dead people moving. Some of the dead people had fallen down just like she had, lying jumbled up on the tiles, and some of them were so close that Nona could see they had been dead for a long time, and some of them had bits missing. Honesty and Hot Sauce and the others had been right. She didn't like this zombie stuff at all. Nona thought that she had seriously bogged it. Okay, said the prince, rising unsteadily to stand.
All right. Okay. Wow. Fine.
As she rose, some of the other dead bodies rose with her, much less gracefully. Others kept still. The prince pointed at Nona. Before Nona could react or struggle, she was seized from behind by strong arms. She tried to make her body fight, but she was too dazed even to be angry. She kept snorting and sneezing and shivering, still trying to get the last bits of water out of her nose. One of the cold, gloved, bad-smelling hands took her jaw firmly and squeezed it shut hard so that Nona could not even say yes or no.
"You," said the prince, "are coming home to the emperor tied and gagged, and not as a sex thing. You," this was Dapira, "prep to leave. This is over. I'm not wasting any more time here. Ready the shuttle to get us out in an hour. We have too much to lose. Duty, are you alive?"
Pyrrha said with difficulty,
"Yes," and, "Everyone with a necromantic body is down."
"Yes, I think my real body just threw up. We're going," Pyrrha said.
"The sixth house.
Oh, fuck the sixth house. Daddy can have you three safe and sound. Well, soundish and like it. I'm extracting my sister before anything else happens. You..."
Corona had opened her mouth to protest.
"You get what you wanted. Deutrus is coming with us. I can't make any promises. God is capricious about Edenites. But I'll take the rap, so don't whine. You can hand her to her father on a silver platter, and maybe he'll stop moaning about supply lines. As for you..." This was to Camilla. Nona dragged her attention to Camilla and was upset.
Camilla had a long, growing red stripe sliced through the soft grey material of her shirt, carved straight down her chest. It was bleeding freely. It did not look too deep, but it was long and nasty. Her dark glasses were trembling on her nose. Camilla said,
"Did you ever intend to emancipate the city, to resettle the people?"
"Absolutely not," said the prince. "I only wanted the sixth as a goodwill gift for God. The moment I got down here, I knew I wasn't staying. This trip was a fuck-up, start to finish, not my fault, and now I have to carry the entrails. There's a resurrection beast up there, Hecht. Don't know if you truly know what that is, but I'm not staying anywhere near. Honestly, the people here don't know how good they have it. We're dealing with some shit back on Antioch, and really, God can't spare the hands. No, the sixth isn't a priority. Which means, I really don't need you. I don't want the details about Cassiopeia, and God doesn't need to know."
Each last word was punctuated with a rise in volume, delivered like she had a mouthful of seeds and was spitting them out one by one. There was a pause afterward. Nona saw that Pyrrha had dragged herself to stand. Crown had advanced forward a step, and so had her bodyguards. The prince sighed. She said,
"So you see, Hecht, you're a bit superfluous, and you got inside my guard quicker than I liked. So here, I'll make you an offer. I can kill you here, or I can take off your arms and your legs, pack you up for interrogation, and kill you later."
"Psychological," said Camilla. "Familiar."
"Yes, you remember, don't you? You intervened for me with Kitherair the First. You saved my remaining arm and my legs, I'll give you that. But you weren't so quick off the mark that you saved my arm, so I admit a great seething well of deferred and probably unjust anger toward you."
Camilla thought about it. "Sorry?" she said.
"Apology not accepted, asshole," said the prince brightly. "So, what do you want? I can kill you now, or I can settle some old ghosts by disarming you and dislegging you."
Crown said, strangled, "I will never, ever forgive you if you do this, Hianthe."
"Traitors, Corona, remember," said the prince. "You're all traitors, so I've got to pick my battles.
You're my sister, so you're my priority. You won't come without your Captain Deuteros. I've given you one thing you wanted very badly, and as per usual, you only want more. Someone's got to pay the piper, my dear, one way or another. Hecht, you can't say I'm not being fair. Camilla said. You're consistent, I'll give you that. Yes, thank you. Nice to be acknowledged. And now, head off, or arms and legs off, and head off later. I don't mean to sway you, but I've done arm off, and it ruined my day. Camilla thought about it again. She thought about it for so long that Nona assumed for a moment that she was really considering these options. You challenged the sixth for its keys, she said eventually. You named the time. You backed down, but I had right of reply. We didn't consent or reject. I accept the challenge of the third. Prince Ianthe Nibirius looked at her. The expression was strange. That was a lifetime ago, she said. Over a year. The challenge is valid. The prize isn't, not any more. What are the stakes? If I lose, I die, said Camilla. If I win, I walk away. What? You and Harrow? I'll never accept. Not Harrow, only me, said Camilla. The prince sounded quite interested and reasonable. You can't kill me in this body, Hecht, or even disable me. And you wouldn't just be fighting my cavalier. You'd be fighting me and Babs. And you've got to know that between Nibirius and me, there are no more weaknesses. I took those away, and now he is perfect. You've no way of winning. No, said Camilla. And I want to die on my feet. How beautiful and lovely a sentiment. Therefore, I refuse, said Prince Ianthe Nibirius, much more impatiently. Piss off, Hecht. An unlosable battle against a wounded swordswoman with no aptitude, no backup, who obviously wants to die. Not only is that fishy, but it's unoriginal. The outnumbered, overpowered hero against the narcissistic villain. Yuck! Just like a storybook. As poor old Augustine used to say, it's impossible, and what's more, it's improbable. Kneel her. The two uniformed soldier zombies knelt Camilla roughly. They squeezed her wrists until, with an agonized hiss of breath, she dropped her daggers. They clattered softly on the carpet. Another zombie jerked her head back. There was movement by the chairs. Ianthe Nibirius jerked her head toward Pyrrha. Some of the zombies were lurching toward her. But Pyrrha had reacted too late. Crown had Pyrrha's gun, and although one of the zombies was bear-hugging her around the middle, she had made the gun make that soft ka-clunk noise and pressed the barrel up into the soft part of her throat. Prince Ianthe Nibirius cried out, "For the love of God, Corona!" "Let her go," said Crown. "The captain or Camilla, make up your mind and take one. You know I can't let them both go. Put the gun down, darling. I don't want to hurt you getting it off you." "I wouldn't get hurt. I'd just die," said Crown, her bronzed throat working against the barrel. "You're not all-powerful here. All you have are wards and puppets. I shoot, the bullet goes through my palate and into the brain, and then you're the crown princess of Ida like you never wanted." "Stop being so fucking dramatic! Stop being so fucking dramatic!" Crown mimicked in a high-pitched voice. "This isn't the time, you dumb, hilarious bitch. You don't even know how to fix Nibirius's hair. He needs it done pompadour. He looks awful." "That's your opposition. Seriously?" "I'm going to shoot myself and you're going to watch," said Crown, with deep satisfaction, "like when we were teens. But this time, I'm going to really tie the rope, really drink the poison." "You didn't then and you wouldn't now, Corona." "Corona, Beth!" Crown had closed her eyes. Nona found that she had started to leak tears from sheer fright, and her eyes felt gritty and awful. The prince said even more urgently, "I can't let Hecht live. You know I can't. I can't fast-talk for Deuteros. Your life is safe." "Then duel her," Crown cried in obvious agony. "Duel her and give her what she wants. None of us ever could." "It's not fair. You're going to be mad at me when I kill her. It's going to be a massacre." "I won't. I swear I won't. Just fight fair." "I'm a lictor, for fuck's sake. You can't get a fair fight between a flea and a flat cannon." "You watched her annihilate Lieutenant Dias. Little girls playing with sticks. If my league exploded, you wouldn't hear the boom in their league for half a myriad. I've become three times the swordsman Babs ever was." Crown was pleading. "One fight, one last duel. You challenged her with Babs, you know, back on Canaan House. I didn't do it, so follow through for me. You always do things for me, don't you? My heart's own, my necromancer." Prince Ianthe Nibirius shuddered. "Drop the gun and I'll do it." Crown hesitated. The prince stepped back from Camilla one step, then another. Crown fumbled with the gun. It made a backward clunk kerr, and then she dropped it loudly to the tiles, where, thankfully, it did not go off. Prince Ianthe Nibirius's shoulders sagged forward. So did the shoulders of every zombie still standing, including the ones holding Nona. This loosened their grip a little bit, and she was able to breathe out. Her nose and eyes were leaking. The zombies, clutching Corona, dragged her back to her seat and sat her down, not gently at all, and they held her wrists flat to the arms of her chair. Another zombie took their booted foot and punted the gun to the other side of the room, where it skidded over the tiles and disappeared into a pile of rubbish. Nona watched Pyrrha's eyes follow it. "Fine," the prince said petulantly. "Fine." And she turned around and she stalked to the centre of the carpet. "The time and place were named," she said. "Now and here. Corona, you are betrayed." Nona watched Crown's throat work. There was a bright, dark red mark there from how hard she had pushed the gun into her neck. She hesitated and said forlornly, "Parietal to Calcaneus, I suppose. Full range, full right. Weapon restrictions limited, but blades only, no necromancy." "I'm made of necromancy. Necromancy literally moves my limbs," said the prince. "No active necromancy," amended Crown. Camilla said, "What about me?" "Well, you're beginning to see the problem, aren't you?" snapped Ianthe Nibirius, slithering her long and shining sword free from its sheath. "You're fighting a dead man, you suicidal sixth house pea-brain. You can't pink me or kill me. I leave this body when I say I leave. But I'll tell you what, for expediency's sake, here." Prince Ianthe Nibirius reached into her pocket. She removed a very pretty lavender handkerchief with the lace edging. She waved it at Camilla with an exaggerated "see this" motion, then tucked it into her jacket, stuffing it deep down her shirt. "Get that off me and you can leave," she said. Camilla said, "Can I keep it?" "What? My handkerchief?" "It's a nice handkerchief," said Camilla. "You're not taking this seriously, are you?" said the prince. The zombies advanced. Prince Ianthe Nibirius said, "Close ranks. Nobody gets outside." And they made a square around the carpet. Nona found herself being dragged out, forced to watch the action from between the shoulders and heads of the dead soldiers. They had closed off the dais, too. A few of them shuffled out of the way so that Crown, pinned to her chair, could see the action. Some of the dead men threw Camilla roughly down on the carpet. Her glasses were now very squiff on her nose, and she rearranged them more securely behind her ears.
She mopped a little at her chest. She was bleeding freely and messily, and she picked up, from where they had fallen, her two long, plain, one-sided knives. Camilla shook out her arms like they were stiff, and she rolled her head from side to side, cheek passing across her chest, and she relaxed. Nona wanted to scream again, but she was dizzy. Waves of something like nausea kept passing up and down the length of her head. She had blinked everything free from her eyes, so she was terribly worried the dye and plastic inserts had gone. Certainly it was much easier to see. This was awful, like watching beautiful Ruby do a flip trick off a bin without being able to filter it through your fingers to see whether he landed it or not. The only fight that Nona had ever been invited to was between Hot Sauce and Honesty, and some much bigger kids who didn't even go to school. She could barely remember why they were fighting. She had still been quite new and confused as to her role as their friend. But she had been told to go down the street after school, past the dairy, to the old athletic stadium, and Hot Sauce and Honesty would fight the others there. Nona had dithered and thought she ought to tell the nice lady teacher about it, but Honesty said if she did, she would get scragged. She hadn't known yet what scragging was, and was horribly afraid it was the thing Honesty did where he licked his finger and put that finger in your ear. When she had gotten to the fight, she had been so nervous and excited that she was sweaty. But then Hot Sauce arrived and said the kids weren't going to show up because one of them had got hit by a car. Honesty had said, "Ho-ho, who did you pay?" And Hot Sauce said, "Nobody, because I drive the car." Everyone went home happy. Crown said, "Parietal to Calcaneus. No exceptions, no mercies. Challenger has right of execution. May the river show mercy on the challenger. Defender has right of property. Point, blade, ricasso off hand. Call." Cam called out, "Camilla the sixth."
"Iante the first," said the prince.
"Three paces back," said Crown. "Turn and begin." When Crown said begin, Nona expected Camilla and the prince to rush at each other. They didn't. They circled each other instead, like they were beginning a dance and weren't fussed about starting any time soon. Camilla kept both of her hands tucked up close to her chest, knives high, as though she wanted to defend her head. The prince's sword was held forward, light and ready and slender, gleaming under the light bulbs and red where its polished surface reflected the carpet. It seemed too pretty to do any harm. Camilla said conversationally, "No offhand." "I didn't mean to take anything to this planet I couldn't replace," said the prince.
"I shouldn't have bothered."
"Why two knives?"
"Shock and awe," said Camilla.
The prince stepped forward and flickered in and out, extending somehow and then snapping back to the same place she'd been standing, like a shadow jumping up a wall. Camilla did a graceless little shrug step to one side. The prince cocked her head like a bird, then jabbed her sword down toward Camilla's thigh. But Camilla had already moved one of her knives to meet it, so the sword just went ching. They circled another couple of steps. The prince jabbed again. Camilla's knife went ching again, up near her heart this time. The prince exuded the dispassionate curiosity of a child poking a dead cat with a stick. Camilla was focused, like the prince was the only thing she'd ever been interested in.
"If this is all some dreary attempt at stalling," the prince began, "I'm going to be annoyed."
She tried another jab, this time with a hint of petulance. It went clang, not ching, because Camilla hit the prince's sword hard with one of her knives. The tip of the sword swung wide and Camilla lunged with the other knife aimed at the prince's belly. The prince seemed to flex to the side, making her body flat, and simultaneously snapped her sword hand inward so it caught Camilla in the side of the head. Camilla staggered and backed hurriedly away as the sword tip came slicing down past her shoulder. She kept stepping back until there were several paces between the two of them.
Nona understood innately that this was not a good sign.
"You've got better," said Camilla. "You've been training with someone who knew what they were doing."
"You've gone to pieces," said Prince Ianthe Nibirius. "Oh me, oh my, the local's not much good for sparring."
Nona squeezed her eyes shut and tried to control her breathing, tried to ignore the horrible glove clamped over her mouth. She wished she could get one good deep lungful of air that didn't smell awful. She felt as though if she could stay calm, that would somehow make Camilla calm, and if Camilla could stay calm, everything could still be okay. There was another ching, another clang, then a scuffle of steps on carpet and a huff of breath that sounded like Camilla's. Nona's eyes flicked open. They were still facing each other, closer now, Camilla crouching a little with her knives crossed, the prince regarding her with that same dead cat analytical gaze.
"No," the prince said. "No, this is a bore, I'm afraid. A disappointment all round. How like the sixth to take the fun out of suicide?"
Camilla flipped the knife in her left hand so she was holding it backward, which, under normal circumstances, Nona would have found enormously exciting and cool. She slashed upward with the other knife, and as the prince stepped back disdainfully, Camilla rose up to her full height and swung her right arm back over her shoulder like she was going to try to chop something in two pieces. The arm whipped forward, there was a blur of confused motion and a wet thud as a knife grew out of the chest of a dead soldier. The prince had moved rapidly to the side so the knife didn't hit her, and Camilla had ducked the same way and was driving inward and upward, left hand first, blade flashing back round into a normal grip as she came. For a moment, Nona could see the shape of it, like the shape a mouth made right before the sound came out. Camilla had put herself behind the prince's sword, so there was no way the prince could get the blade round into a position where it could hit her. Her hand was swinging round toward the small of the prince's back, and the knife flip meant that her arm was going to end up longer than the prince would be expecting. It wasn't quite clear how Cam was going to get the handkerchief, but presumably she could think about that once the knife was safely stuck in the prince's body. Then the prince did some sort of complicated dance step back, bringing her sword in close against her chest, and she kicked out with her front leg. Not like when Honesty tried to kick a tin can off a fence post, just a little sharp shove with her foot down low, like she was scaring off a stray cat. Camilla's leg folded, and her lunge collapsed in on itself. She dropped to her knees and started to roll backward, landing awkwardly on her left arm, still holding the knife. She braced one foot against the floor to push herself off and up, and the prince simply turned to follow her motion, flicked the sword up and struck decisively downward. Nona stared. Camilla sprawled on the carpet. Her empty right hand was grasped round the prince's right wrist. The prince's right wrist turned into the prince's right hand, and then into the prince's lovely thin sword, which ran all the way down into Camilla's belly. The point was somewhere quite far inside Camilla, and Nona couldn't see it anymore.
"You really don't know when to throw those things, do you?" said the prince a little sadly.
Camilla said, "Much to the sixth."
Ianthe said, "What?" And then her eyes rolled backward in her head, and she fell.
24.
Every zombie soldier in the room crumpled up like Kevin had tipped them out of the soft play box onto the classroom floor. Nona fell with hers and suffered the incredibly disagreeable experience of two big dead people landing very hard on top of her and in no way becoming less heavy or less dead. Nobody came to help her. Everyone ran to Camilla. Nona didn't mind at all, except that she wanted to run to Camilla herself. Camilla had risen to her knees, the sword driven through her midsection like a kebab with just one thing on it, and she was grimly, solidly, holding the hilt steady, her dark hair sticking on her sweat-stained face. Crown had tumbled next to her in a handsome heap and was trying to hold the sword steady from the other end, with the presence of mind to wrap her hands in her dress so she didn't cut herself to ribbons. She kept saying, "Stay with me, Camilla, stay with me," until Cam murmured wetly and thickly, "Not going anywhere."
"I'm holding you to that," said the body of Ianthe Nibirius. It sat up all of a sudden, like Nola getting woken up by the sponge, only all at once instead of in stages. It jackknifed in two.
Pyrrha had rushed to retrieve her gun the moment all the soldiers started toppling like dolls. Now she walked forward, holding it in both hands, and released the safety, her aim on Ianthe. Then she saw something that Nola couldn't. She lowered the gun. She said,
"You fucking legend."
Ianthe's body ignored her. It grasped the hilt of the blade that was buried in Camilla's body. Camilla did not look up, but only said to Pyrrha,
"It's missed the pelvis. Take it out."
"It's still a gut wound," said Ianthe's body.
"You'll be out of commission."
Curiously, Cam kept addressing all her remarks sideways, as though she could not bear to look at or address the dead body. She said,
"I'll cope."
Nona was horrified. She could not tear her eyes away as Ianthe's body grasped that hilt, supported itself on its knees, and pulled. The body unsheathed the sword. All that slim metal came flashing out. Camilla's chin snapped upward, then back, and she stared at the ceiling, and she did not make any more sound than an unready exhalation. The body flung the sword away. It spun over the tiles, splattering Cam's blood as it went. Ianthe's body tugged off its right glove, and Pyrrha dropped down on the other side, unfolding Cam's shirt. Cam was really a mess now. Crown said, "I'll get bandages," and left Cam propped up by Pyrrha and Ianthe's body. Camilla didn't like this. She said roughly, "Give me space, I've had worse." Pyrrha moved away, wiping her hands on her trousers, but Ianthe's body didn't. It placed its arms over the flooding wound in Camilla's side, and Cam's chin lolled on her chest. Her breathing was wet, then still and quiet. Ianthe's body said,
"Won't you look at me, Camilla Hecht?"
Camilla murmured something that Nona could not hear. The body said, "I died, and you carried me. I gambled, and you covered my bet. You kept the faith and were the instrument of both my vengeance and my grace. And now I have fought through time and the river and Ianthe the First, fought and bested Ianthe the First, and I hope I never fight her ever again. Will you not look at me now, Cam, and know me?" Camilla raised her chin. She looked at the dead face. She said quietly,
"Yes, Warden, I will always know you."
Their foreheads touched. Camilla reached out with her slippery hand, and Palamedes clasped it with Ianthe Nibirius's cold, gloveless one. Because both of their hands were very messy, it made an embarrassing squelch, but neither of them appeared to notice or care. Nona had to look away. She heard Palamedes say, in the voice of Ianthe Nibirius,
"Pyrrha, I can barely do anything. I'm only the hand in a sock puppet. I don't think I could unpick a single ward, and I can't do a damn thing for Cam's bleeding. Thank God nothing's protruding."
Cam said without opening her eyes, "Don't worry about me, Warden, I'll walk it off."
"Yes, thanks for your input," said Palamedes pleasantly. "I've taken it under advisement and will add it to the next agenda."
Camilla smiled that wonderful hot metal smile that Nona had loved as long as she had been alive.
"Jackass," she said.
"Don't try anything thalergetic, Sextus," Pyrrha said. "Focus on the big picture. We don't need fine-tuning. All you need to do is read the body you're in. It would have touched the corpse. Discounting this room, there shouldn't be any other remains. Where'd she stash it?"
Palamedes took off the other glove on Ianthe Nibirius's dead hand. He blindly grasped about, trying not to dislodge Camilla. and put that hand on the tiles. He had to think about it, but then he said,
I can't get fine details.
There's some kind of corpse stashed in a downstairs annex room. Two lefts will bring you to a corridor with Ianthe's fingerprints all over it. Then there's remains, and that's the only corpse sig for 200 metres, which doesn't really account for...
Sextus, I was in the military. That's not fine details. It's a full intelligence briefing, said Pyrrha. Good. Go and get Gideon's body. Take Nona, poor Nona. Dig her out before she's squashed any more.
Thanks, said Nona.
But you're...
Pyrrha, we have no time. Ianthe's still alive and kicking, up here. Palamedes tapped his perfectly coiffed head. Crown had emerged from a side door, clutching a hard-shell plastic box, crossing over to join them. When Palamedes said, alive, she nearly dropped the box. Her expression was terrible. Pyrrha said,
Sextus, that wasn't wise.
Probably not, said Palamedes. But I fought Ianthe Tridentarius within an inch of our lives inside her head for a long, long time. How long did it take out here?
4, maybe 5 seconds, said Crown, ashen-faced.
Lucky you. To me it was a little longer, said Palamedes with a slight smile. It would have been a disgrace to kill her.
No, Cam, I mean it.
I currently have more respect for Ianthe than she ever won from me previously. I'm going to hold her back as long as I can, but if I hold her for more than an hour, I'll be astonished. Your Highness, go and get Captain Deutros, then meet us back here.
Crown kept fingering the package of bandages. Her eyes were huge and purple and glimmering like pools of violet water. She said quietly,
You are a good man, Sextus.
No. If I didn't think it was safer to trap Ianthe than to let her retreat back to her body out there in deep space somewhere, I'm not sure I wouldn't have killed her. Just because I feel good about not killing her doesn't mean I wouldn't have. It wasn't mercy, Princess.
I don't care. Thank you. Thank you for not hurting her.
Let me help, Cam. I know how to dress a field injury.
I'm without resources, said Palamedes with dignity. But I think I can still bandage my cavalier's abdominal wound. Can you carry Judith Deutros?
Of course, but the guards...
Unconscious or locked up, said Pyrrha. I clonked half of them on the head, and the other ones are in the mess. Deutros's door should be unlocked, but don't move her without sedating her.
Nona, you're with me.
Crown dropped the scraps of her dress. When she looked at Palamedes, Nona was suddenly struck by the idea that Crown wasn't happy at all, or grateful. And yet she obviously was hungrily and thirstily grateful. She put Nona in mind of Noodle, suddenly wanting to go out but wanting to stay in the basket, wanting to run around outside but wanting to come back. Then Crown deflated like a beautiful balloon and fled. Nona felt wobbly and unreal. Her body was able to walk and move and hold itself upright, but she still felt very light-headed, disconnected from herself. As Pyrrha steered her out of the room, Nona kept looking back over her shoulder at Camilla and the body Palamedes was inhabiting, still kneeling on the floor, bloody and bent. Palamedes looked as though he were talking quietly to her, but Pyrrha closed the door behind them. Once they were out of the room, Pyrrha took Nona by the shoulders and said,
You all right?
Nona's eyes kept crossing and uncrossing.
I'm not sure, she confessed. I feel strange.
Did those corpses falling on you hit a nerve?
No, I only feel funny.
You want me to pinch you, kiddie?
That was so banal and unwelcome that Nona shook back into her body out of pure disgust.
No, I don't want to be pinched. Why do you always offer to pinch me? I never want to be pinched.
Just proving I'm me. Look at you. Not sure I like the couture. Who did your eyes? It's all coming off. Here, use my sleeve, not yours.
Nona obligingly used the sleeve, and quite a lot of white gummy stuff came off on it.
Smart way of hiding it, though. I should have thought of that. Good to go?
I can do it.
Okay. Shake a leg, said Pyrrha.
The barracks had not got any less fetid or dark. In fact, Nona balked at the dark flight of stairs as they smelled so bad and had to hold her breath as Pyrrha escorted her down. And there was so much rubbish, so many strange things laid out in strange places, that at one point they had to pick their way over piles and piles of boxes in order to pass.
This place is a maze. I never would have found her myself, said Pyrrha, lifting Nona over a busted-up bedframe.
Pyrrha, you're not really a lictor again, are you? You're you, not your other self.
No, I was only pretending. Like you are only pretending. You can check my eyes, said Pyrrha.
I hope you don't mind being the last one to know, said Nona, dusting herself off a bit self-consciously. But I'm dying.
This fell completely flat.
Course you are, said Pyrrha.
I mean it, Pyrrha.
Yeah, I suspected you were, though, Pyrrha said cheerfully. I didn't make a big deal out of it. We've all got our secrets. But the soul longs for the body, Nona. Even a fucked-up soul. Even a soul that's been changed forever. It takes a lot to acclimate a soul to a body it wasn't born in, if that original body's around for it to miss.
But you're not sad, said Nona.
Of course I'm not sad. You're not dying on my watch. Kitty, when you were yelling...
Nona was still a little embarrassed about that. I took Cam a bit too literally. Pyrrha opened her mouth to say something, but then they rounded the second left and she shut her mouth. The hallway corridors were made of good white interior bricks braced with concrete and metal struts. Lots of buildings were. The white stone kept out the heat. But one short section of this particular corridor had been decorated in delicate blood filigree and squiggles. Not only the walls, but the floor and even the ceiling. The squiggles were thickest in a square on one wall, like someone had wanted to mark off a door. Pyrrha glanced at the wall, and then she barked out a laugh.
Is that writing? Said Nona.
Sort of. It's a ward. A mark meant to keep us out. Necromancy. That bit's writing, though. House.
What's it say?
Pyrrha pointed.
Don't go through here.
And pointed again.
I mean it, idiot. You will disintegrate.
A bit obvious. Everything else was
good and paranoid. These things are all over the barracks. Her bedroom, the shipyard, the downstairs tunnel exits. Some of them were blinds, though. She never trusted me fully. The corpse must be down here.
Okay. What's the trap?
Pyrrha took up a piece of trash from a box that had half tumbled over, a piece of broken pipe, and tossed it underhand toward the door. It shivered into bits before Nona's eyes, and a fine patter of dust came out the other end and dribbled on the corridor floor.
It's a shit version of Mercy Morn's old entropy trap, said Pyrrha. Not half as good. Done entirely through wards. Brilliant, but entirely reliant on wards. Fucking ridiculous. Good at keeping people out, though, and almost impossible for anyone but another lictor to break.
See what it's made out of?
That's blood. Blood wards age, and they burn out if you make them work too hard. And I'm sorry, Nono, but that's where you come in.
Nona didn't understand.
If you want us to stand here chucking stuff at it, we'll be here all day.
Nona, said Pyrrha. Your regeneration ability is a million times better than any normal lictor's. None of them could regrow the way you do. I'm not sure you've got a limit, not with the kind of damage you've come back from. So, I'm really sorry. We're going to have to use you, and it's going to hurt like fuck. I wouldn't ask you to do this if it were not literally the most important thing in the world.
Nona found herself giving a fluttery sigh. She felt a little bit envious and a little bit weary.
What's so special about this body we're going after, anyway?
In general? She's the key to a door that's been kept locked for 10,000 years, said Pyrrha. Personally, she's the last thing I have left of a woman I tried to trick into loving me, and got played myself. And for you, she might be you, Kitty. Nona found herself sighing again, like her body wanted to let out all its sound at once. One of her ears felt slightly blocked, and when she tilted her head and blew her nose and pulled at her earlobe, a little trickle of water came out. "What if I don't like me?" she said. But Pyrrha didn't seem to understand. "Well, you'll probably start visiting clubs and trying to hit on the dancers, and going from relationship to relationship, not really being able to commit." Nona was severe.
"You talk too much, Pyrrha."
For a moment, she could not decide what to put in. She considered the foot, on the understanding that the foot was the furthest away from the head, so maybe it would take the pain longer to travel. But that would have messed with her shoe. Shoes never grew back, and she had never liked her hands. Nona reached out with her left one, trembling a little. She never minded pain as it happened, but she was a terrible baby anticipating, until she gasped, "Pyrrha, help, I can't, I'm frightened." And Pyrrha took mercy on her and grasped her by the elbow. She thrust Nona's arm forward. The tips of her fingers breached some invisible barrier, and they dissolved. Something awful was happening where her fingers met the barrier. The tops of her fingertips became a red and grey mist. A fine spray splattered back on her hand or became tiny white drops of steam when they hit the barrier, and then those drops of steam became nothing. Pyrrha was holding her still as her hand burned apart. Her hand felt sick. Her hand felt like throwing up. It was like the lurching pain of having a tooth knocked out, if it was about 100 teeth and they were all at the ends of your hands. But the worst part was what her hand was doing, because her hand freaked out. Great gouts of skin were suddenly travelling up where they shouldn't have been, looking like red and brown and white lumps of wax, soft, ferny sprouts of what she realised was her own bone were poking and trembling out of that flesh, spiralling forward as though trying to find something to grasp onto, as though they could regrow her fingers in a safer place. That was what frightened her. Watching that flesh resolve, watching that flesh resolve into extra fingers. Out of the wax, another hand sprouted, reaching back to water as though it were a mirror, and Nona screamed, sickened, and thrust her hand into the wrist to get rid of it. With a retort like a million tiny fireworks, the red marks covering the corridor exploded. One went, then the next, then the rest, all at once. Pop! Pop, 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 pop! Like Honesty had bought them cheap at the dairy and thrown a match in the box. There was a noise like a car backfiring, the air shimmered, and a fine bloody powder rained down from the ceiling. Nona dropped to her haunches and clutched her hand between her thighs, afraid to look at it. Her heart was beating so hard that she was worried it would burst. Her gaze lurched drunkenly, as though her eyes were independent of herself. For a moment, she wanted to yell, "Help!" like she had done before, pretending to be the captain. She wanted to shout. She wanted to be listened to. She wished the barrier had taken her hands. She wished she had thrust herself into it, become that big seething mass of flesh and meat and tendrils, ruined her body, just melted it, come back messed up, so that nobody could want her body but her, so that it would be hers and nobody else's. This was a horrible thing to think. Nona hated herself immediately and fervently. Pyrrha had dropped down beside her, had gathered her in her big, dark, wiry arms, smelling ferally like sweat, her cheeks a little rough from the bristles where she hadn't shaved. Her throat was scratchy and nice, and Nona buried her face in it and made little sounds until she felt better. Pyrrha had reached down and seized her hand, was saying, "You're fine, there's nothing wrong, look." But she couldn't make Nona look for fully 20 seconds. When Nona looked at last, it was fine,
Her hand was perfectly normal, except the fingernails had grown way too long, massively long, so that one of her hands looked like a claw. Pyrrha immediately took out her pocket knife and shaved them down for her, a bit ragged, but much better.
Brave girl. Sorry, Nona, no time to catch our breath. Go start opening doors, she said. I'm going to clean this up in case any of the wards are partially intact. Don't want the body losing chunks on the way out. She's going to be hell to carry.
Nona's head swam again briefly, but she nodded. She set off down the corridor. She opened the first door on the left, but it was only a cupboard with some brooms. She jogged to the next one, a heavier door with a key still in the lock. She turned the key, pushed the handle, and stood on the threshold. There was just an ordinary bedroom. It didn't have any windows. They were probably at least a floor underground, and it was only lit by a single light bulb, so it was pretty dim. It looked wide. There was room for the whole bed, and would have been room for another if you pushed it up against the wall. And stretched out on the bed, nearly too big for it, was the girl from her dream. The girl who might be her. Nona tiptoed in, feeling absurdly that it was wrong to make noise, and peered at the body. She had not seen many dead bodies close up. The long corpse was dressed beautifully in white. White trousers, brown boots that looked nearly new, a white jacket with silver frogging and toggles. The jacket had been unbuttoned some. The girl looked like she had gone to sleep with her shoes on after a long, tiring day. Her face had that half-past-a-dream expression. Her red hair was even redder in the dark, brighter than Pyrrha's and redder than Honesty's, and the little wreath of bones and blossoms was askew over her temples. She had a decided chin and a nose that was the complete opposite of Nona's nose, one that put her in mind of those big poison desert cats born in the morning was crazy about. Nona wasn't at all sure she was beautiful. The face wasn't bad. It made her think of something, but nothing bad really, only dead. Her skin was very much dead person skin, ashen and tinted the wrong colour around the nostrils and the mouth. But even if she hadn't been dead, Nona was critical. Her eyelashes were very dark, but short and curly, whereas Nona thought all eyelashes should be long and straight. Her own eyelashes were long and straight. The corpse had too much mouth and a dimple. Nobody in her home had a dimple. You could not at least see the veins in her eyelids, which were heavy and cold and deep set. But Nona thought it was going to be a shame to go from being so lovely as she was to being so red-headed. Nona put her hand close to the corpse's cold hand, very tentatively, expecting something to happen once she touched it, that she would suddenly melt away or pop out of existence like a soap bubble. What happened made her think much better of the corpse. It opened its eyes, and its eyes were yellow, the gold of the old sky, like hers, only much foggier. Those were beautiful. Nona had always adored her eyes, and here they were again, on the corpse, only partially spoiled for being dead. They looked like treasure at night. The corpse looked at her in such mute, helpless appeal, spoke to her in her first language, that Nona did not have to think about what she did next. She leant down and laid a kiss right on that cool, dead, crooked mouth. She kissed her just the once. The corpse's mouth was soft and rough and cold, and did not respond to Nona's mouth, but a tremble went through the upper body. Nona was surprised and relieved to find that the corpse girl tasted like toothpaste. At the tremble, Nona pulled back, self-conscious. The expression on the corpse's face could not have been more rigid with shock and disbelief. She found herself saying, a little defensively, "You looked like you wanted to be kissed, that's all." A shadow crossed the doorway, blocking out quite a lot of the outside light. Nona turned around and said, "Pyrrha,
I'm really sorry, I messed up.
But Pyrrha was staring at the corpse girl as though she had seen a ghost, or maybe two. When Nona turned to the girl, she was taken aback. The corpse's eyes were closed and she lay completely still on the bed, arms loose, limbs heavy and untidy, the very picture of deadness. Pyrrha crossed over, stared down at the barely illuminated corpse and said,
"Yeah, that's Gideon Nav, all right. I'd know her anywhere. I wouldn't need to be told. Talk about being the mother's daughter."
Nona was puzzled.
"Who?"
"You've seen her photo," said Pyrrha.
And she reached over, hovered a hand quite close to Gideon's face, and then pulled it back, apparently having thought better of it.
"Blood of Eden mass manufactured them. Wasn't even a good shot. But this kid's the spit of her. Nearly. She's him in the eyes and brows. Amazed Mercy Morn didn't see it. But she wasn't looking for it, I guess."
"Her mother was the woman who broke your heart," guessed Nona.
"Yes," said Pyrrha. "And let's not get too cute about it, though. My best friend and I punched her out an airlock. Apart from that, I was ready to commit."
For some reason, Nona felt vaguely hurt and envious. She didn't have a mother for Pyrrha to have punched out an airlock, nor had Pyrrha ever looked at her the way she now looked at the dead corpse with red hair. A kind of soft, guarded want, a hunger, a living desire to take the corpse in her arms like Kevin's wanting desire with his dolls, to own, to squeeze, to coss it and destroy. She remembered and said hastily, before Pyrrha could say anything too personal,
"Pyrrha, she can hear you. I think she's awake."
Pyrrha looked at Nona. She looked at the dead body. She put her hand on the dead body's forehead, worked her fingers into the funny little scarf at her neck, and the corpse lay as inert and as dead as it had when Nona walked into the room.
Nona said, "I mean it. I woke her up. I kissed her."
Now Pyrrha looked at Nona. The look on her face was nothing but a very sad, rough kind of amusement. Less desire than a kind of understanding that Nona suddenly didn't want. Pyrrha touched Nona briefly on the cheek and said,
"Why?"
Nona found her cheeks growing hot.
"I just did. No reason."
"Nothing happened? What did it feel like?"
"That's private, thank you," said Nona primly.
"Phew," said Pyrrha. "Well, you're not in a heap on the floor, so we can rule out pneumatic reversion."
She scrubbed a hand across her eyes briefly.
"There was a bad option where your soul snapped straight into her body, leaving your body stuck with no soul at all, and that would have been a shit time all round."
"Would I have died?" Nona asked, interested.
"You'd have tried to," said Pyrrha. "The body needs thallergy and a soul to keep the lights on. Anastasia's tripod principle. Body plus thallergy but no soul is basically a very weird vegetable. After a while it gives up and shuts down."
"She looked at me, Pyrrha," said Nona,
and to demonstrate, reached over and prodded the body hard in the ribs. The body did not respond.
"Did you catch her eye colour?"
"Gold, like mine, but cloudy."
"Good. Ianthe couldn't transfer," said Pyrrha. "God, that little shit shouldn't be running around in this day and age. Would have taken Cassiopeia and Cyrus and Ulysses and Kitherea just to keep her in hand. She's good, and she's imaginative, and she's very frightening. And now there's no one to stop her. Why the hell did John let her bring the kid's body? He must have known that Blood of Eden would go apeshit the moment they saw it. Well, heave-ho."
She squatted down, then heaved the corpse over her shoulder. The girl's head hung down over Pyrrha's back, and her legs hung across Pyrrha's front. Nona saw that the girl was wearing a beautiful jewelled scabbard on her hip, with a lovely sword hilt right above it, all in a sort of pearly white colour. There was something clipped to her other hip that she couldn't quite make out, also pearl white, a jumble of clear white blades and plate rivets. Everything she was wearing was lovely as Xianthe Nibirius's clothes had been, if not lovelier. But the pristine whiteness of her uniform made her look that much more dead, except for the hair. Pyrrha grunted and said, "Fuck me, she's heavy. It's all this crappy first house tat. I don't know what the fuck John's thinking, dressing everyone to look like the military wing of Disco." Nona was beginning to doubt herself furiously.
"Pyrrha, I'm still not sure."
"Tell Sextus and Hecht once we're upstairs," said Pyrrha. "Also, hey, I have half a protein bar in my pocket. I want you to eat that. I bet you haven't had anything in hours. Cam can't make you eat like I can, right?"
Nona subsided into glum silence. She stared at the head of the corpse prince as Pyrrha carefully walked her out of the doorway, hoping briefly that Pyrrha would clonk the corpse's head so that the corpse may be said, "Ow!" But Pyrrha manoeuvred her smoothly. The eyes kept shut. Nona trailed behind watchfully the whole time. But they kept shut. And even when Nona caught up to Pyrrha and gently touched that cool, dark corpse hand, nothing happened. As they passed through the broken wards of the corridor, now completely scuffed out, Nona found herself staggering. Pyrrha said, "You okay? Can you keep up just a little longer?" And she said, "Yes," and tried to keep up. They took two rights, and thankfully Pyrrha didn't ask for help as she heaved the corpse prince up the stairs. Crown was waiting for them in the corridor. When she saw the body, her lovely violet eyes widened, and her hand went reflexively to the black-hilted sword at her hip, and she said, "It is her. Poor Gideon."
"Don't get your hopes up. It might be a doll copy," warned Pyrrha. "I can't see why John would ever let her corpse out into the world, even with a lictor to guard it. She's a walking suicide note."
Crown had been tentative, but she suddenly surged forward and cradled that very red head in her hands, smoothing her fingers through the hair, playing with one of the little winking leaves that scintillated in the wreath. She said, wondering, "But she looks exactly like she did, apart from the outfit." "Ianthe couldn't have done the outfit. She's more minimalist than that." Her fingers caressed the ashen upside-down cheek. "Poor Ninth. Imagine the hopes and fears of the whole universe contained in one dead little red star."
"If that's poetry, don't quit your day job," said Pyrrha. "What's the status of the shuttle?"
Crown dropped her hand from the corpse's hair and grimaced.
"You're carrying the only good news. Palamedes says the shuttle's fucked. His words exactly. He got surprisingly filthy."
"What? How? Is it warded?"
"No, but the fuel is," confessed Corona. "And that stuff's not only combustible, Dvay, it's pyrophoric. If we mess around with it too much, this whole barracks is going to go up and set light to most of the quarter."
Nona said feebly, "I could probably..."
"No," said Pyrrha.
"Camilla says forget the shuttle for now. We can come back for it. She wants we suffer to secure the sixth house, and we'll take it from there. I left them with the captain in the main hall," Crown added.
Her forehead crumpled into its worry pucker again, and she said,
"That's the other bad news. Judith's acting up. Her sedative's taking forever to kick in. The warden's working on her, but he says he can't do much. Why could Ianthe do necromancy through Babs's corpse, but Palamedes can't?"
"Just answered your own question. Ianthe's a lictor working through the corpse of her own cavalier. That body's hers to make a revenant out of," said Pyrrha. "He won't be able to do anything until he's back in his cavalier. And at this rate..."
She cut herself off and said,
"Help Nona. She's worked too hard."
Nona was about to protest, but then Crown turned around and offered her back for a piggyback. Nona couldn't resist, even if it was purely a kiddie thing to do. She let Crown pull her legs around her hips and heave her up onto her back, arms twined around Crown's neck, with Crown saying in her gallant, flirtatious way,
"Now I have you, my pretty maid," and making Nona laugh, if weakly.
Past the big, broad corridor leading to the open front doors, night had fallen profoundly on the city. The honks and nice, fresh, car-flavoured night air came surging through the doors with a warm breeze. It was disappointing to go back into the big tiled room with all the dead bodies in it, which smelled bad and closed in. But she was delighted to find Camilla looking much better, and even standing up. Her whole abdomen was swathed in bandages. They had taken all the clothing off her top, and she was wearing Ianthe Naberius's white jacket draped over her shoulders, but she was standing. Her face still looked grey beneath its nice normal olive, and she was shiny with sweat. But she was healthy enough to shift her weight from side to side and jiggle one foot impatiently. The captain had been brought into the big room and laid down with some rags rolled up as a pillow beneath her head. She kept moving restlessly, like lightning kept jolting through her arms and legs, like her knees and arms were attached to some drunken puppeteer. Her mouth kept opening, but Nona was devoutly grateful that nothing came out, nothing except a noise like, "Ah, ah, ah." When Nona and Crown came in, and Pyrrha with the corpse, both Palamedes and Camilla looked up at them keenly. Something in Palamedes's face changed and creased, and he said,
"What? No reaction?"
"No. Nona even gave the damn thing mouth to mouth," said Pyrrha.
Nona was embarrassed at how her voice peeped when she said,
"Private information, Pyrrha."
But Palamedes said,
"Does that mean? Is it just a copy? Put it down."
Pyrrha fell to her knees, and Nona was interested to see how gentle she was with the red-headed corpse prince, which really did seem completely dead. Its arms and legs were heavy and limp. Crown squatted down so that Nona could slither down off her back. Camilla said,
"If that's a copy, this is all over."
"It can't be," said Crown blankly.
"It very much can," said Pyrrha.
"No, I mean, that doesn't make sense," she said. "If it was a copy, my sister didn't know it. She's been acting like she's been standing on hot coals this entire time, and she wasn't doing it to fool me."
Palamedes said,
"Give me a moment."
He fell to his knees next to the corpse, quite awkwardly. He wasn't moving as nicely as he usually did. As he fell, he said mildly,
"Think I displaced a patella. It's not as easy as with you, Cam. Right, Gideon, let's have a look at you."
He undid her scarf, and Nona looked away. Beneath the scarf, a huge wound in the throat made the neck yawn wide open. When she peeked back, wishing she had her braids to screen everything, she saw that Palamedes had unbuttoned the shirt part way, and there was another big wound in the chest. A big, purple, bloodless puncture wound, with white teeth peeking out coyly from within.
"Damage is consistent with reported injuries. There's another wound lower down. If it's John's copy, that doesn't prove anything. It's going to be exact," said Pyrrha. "I know. But I do have a personal advantage here. I've touched her when she was alive."
"Yeah, but..."
Palamedes had placed Ianthe Naberius's hand over the wound. He closed his eyes.